Hello, this is Lori Brown from the Nurse Protection Association. I'm a nurse attorney, and I'm speaking with today's guest, Dr. Gregory Kaufman. Dr. Kaufman is also an attorney, and he is the owner of the Kaufman Firm in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Good afternoon, Dr. Kaufman.
Good afternoon.
How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good.
Good.
Thank you for agreeing to talk to the nurses today about protecting themselves from malpractice. Can you tell me a little bit about your background? Why did you go to medical school?
Well, I guess I can't really tell you why I went to medical school, except to say that from the time I was, I guess some of my earliest memories are an extreme interest in medicine. I was reading medical books and interested in becoming a doctor since I was about, I don't know, like I say, some of my earliest memories, 3 or 4 years of age. And I went through the entirety of my childhood and my adolescence and my early adulthood aimed at medicine.
So you were one of the children with all the medical books and models?
Well, I was, but the funny thing is that I grew up in kind of a, frankly, in kind of a quasi-ghetto, and I lived with my grandparents, and at a young age I convinced my grandfather to get a library card at the public library, and he used to take me to the library, and I'd have him check out medical books for me when I was a little kid, and I used to just, you know, I was fascinated reading about medicine. I taught myself how to read when I was real young, and so it's just an interest I'd had for a long, long time, and then I did a lot of research, medical research when I was in high school, and that kind of solidified my interest, and it was kind of a foregone conclusion that that was what I was going to do.
And what happened that made you decide to go into law?
Well, it's a long story, but I'll give you the headline version. I was very altruistic when I was in medical school, and when I got out, when I completed my when I did my residency, and when I got out in practice, and I was frankly kind of shocked at some of the things that were going on in medicine. I saw patients mistreated, misdiagnosed. I saw people killed, people paralyzed, brain damaged as a result of improper medical care time and time again. And I was also very bothered by the conspiracy of silence that absolutely, positively does go on in medicine. And I saw families misinformed, misled, outright lied to on some occasions, and I was actually expected to go along with that system, which I never would, and so I started law school more as a curiosity than anything, because part of my career was as a medical examiner, and I was in court all the time interacting with lawyers, so I was kind of interested in, I got kind of interested in the legal system, and so I was, I guess it was my, I was almost finished with my third year of law school, and at that point I had, was planning on staying in medicine, and there was a case at a university hospital that I was associated with where a woman died in the operating room, and I was called about that as a medical examiner, and there was no apparent problem with anesthesia, no apparent problem with bleeding or anything else, and she was an elderly lady, and she had a lot of multi-system organ disease. She had heart disease and liver disease and lung disease and all kinds of problems. And she was having a major gastrointestinal surgery that she required, and she just had a cardiac arrest on the table. So I released the case back to the hospital. The death certificate was not filled out properly, so I was recontacted later on by the funeral director, and I talked to the surgeon again and got the story, same story about what had happened to this lady. So I completed my own death certificate, and I thought that would put it into the case. The woman's husband came to talk to me about a month later, and he was kind of shocked when I told him that sometimes elderly patients with a lot of multi-system organ disease just can't withstand the stress of surgery, and they have something akin to a heart attack on the table. And he looked at me and he said, you know, my wife didn't have any of those diseases, and in fact, this was elective plastic surgery. So it occurred to me that I had been duped, and I reopened an investigation into the case, and bottom line is what happened, the medical records were completely silent about this, but what happened was that, in fact, she did not have any of this multi-system organ disease that I was told about, but instead this was indeed elective plastic surgery. And as I recall, she was having a scar revised or something like that, and she had a catheter put in a neck vein that came out during the operation, and she bled to death on the table.
Wow.
Because no one had noticed the catheter becoming dislodged. And that was enough to make me say, I'm going to do something different. So I've been a lawyer now. I practiced medicine for about 12 years, and I've been a lawyer doing essentially nothing but medical negligence cases for about 23 years.
Wow, that's so fascinating. So anyways, in your medical or in your legal career, do you have some tips on how nurses can protect themselves from malpractice?
I do, I have quite a bit to say about that subject, so I'll try to remember what what I think needs to be said. First off, in my medical malpractice law practice, I sue nurses and I sue hospitals for nursing conduct all the time. It's very frequent. In fact, I would say probably 80 or 90% of the time in these cases, I have a hospital involved, and oftentimes it's because of nursing conduct. And there are several things that are repeated themes of these cases, and there are things that nurses should know about and things that they can do to substantially decrease their likelihood of being named as a defendant in a medical negligence lawsuit. The first thing is, and this is probably the most important thing, and it's a very basic thing, and that is to know what the nursing standard of care is and meet the standard of care. Now, the standard of care is defined a little different in different jurisdictions, but basically what it is what a reasonably well-qualified nurse would do under the same or similar circumstances with due consideration for the facilities available and the locality involved. Now that's the legal definition of standard of care. What it is in practical terms is what another nurse says it is. And here's what I mean by that. If a nurse is named as a defendant in a medical negligence lawsuit or a nursing negligence lawsuit, the plaintiff will have to find a nurse to testify against the defendant nurse and to say under oath that the defendant nurse failed to meet the standard of care and that failure to meet the standard of care in some way either caused or substantially contributed to injury to the patient. Now, that's where it comes in that it's basically whatever a nurse says it is. The nurse expert who would testify against the defendant nurse can testify on the basis of their education, their training, their experience, nursing literature. Oftentimes, it's just a matter of common sense, and that's enough to establish a case against a nurse or a hospital in connection with something a nurse is alleged to have done wrong.
So is that why there's lawsuits, because one person says there's negligence and another person says there's not?
Well, all the time that a lawsuit is maintained against a nurse or, let's say, a hospital in connection with something a nurse is alleged to have done improper, there has to be some testimony to support the case against the nurse. So there has to be an expert witness involved against the nurse. That expert witness is usually another nurse who is willing to, under oath, state that the nurse defendant fell below standards of care and caused harm to the patient.
I see. Okay.
Now, almost always, and it doesn't matter, it really doesn't matter what the nurse does or doesn't do. There are lots of nurses around the country who will jump to the aid of their colleague, and they will testify to some ridiculous, crazy stuff and say that it meets the standard of care. But a lot of times, it's quite easy to show that the defense expert nurse is not testifying to things that are supported by nursing literature. Sometimes they're just testifying to things that just don't make sense, and a jury is not likely to believe what they're saying. Now, those are that of course occurs in cases where there's clear-cut negligence, and those are the only kind of cases really that a good malpractice attorney takes.
So what other things can get nurses in trouble?
Well, aside from knowing the standard of care and meeting the standard of care, the next most important thing is probably how the nurse acts toward the patient and the patient's family members. A lot of times what results in a telephone call to me, even in cases where there's really not enough there that I would even take the case, there's not really a departure from the standard of care, although sometimes there is. But oftentimes the thing that sparks the telephone call is that the nurse in question has been disrespectful to the patient or family members. The nurse has not responded to calls from the patients. Not responding to a call light, for example, is a classic situation that tends to upset patients and upset family members. And it's oftentimes these kinds of behaviors that will spark a call to an attorney. Another thing that is sometimes responsible is if the nurse either doesn't answer questions that are asked by the patient or the patient's family members, or this is awful, and that's if the patient gives the patient or the family member inaccurate or untruthful information. And that happens from time to time, and if a patient finds out about that, that's oftentimes bad news for the nurse. So the nurse has to be straightforward, honest, and caring toward the patient and responsive to the patient's needs, their requests, and responsive to family members. And that goes a long way toward preventing cases being brought against the nurse, in my experience.
Okay. Any other tips?
Yeah. One of the most common ways, the most common things that arises in my cases is a nurse's failure to meet the standard of care by being a patient advocate. Patient advocacy is a very important part of nursing practice. And even the staunchest of defense experts will admit that a nurse has an obligation to be above everything else a patient advocate. And what that means basically is that the nurse has an obligation to protect the patient. The nurse's primary responsibility is protecting the patient, not appeasing the doctor. Being a patient advocate is a concept that's been around since the late 1800s, in fact. Something that was put out, I think it was a code of ethics that was put out by the American Nurses Association. There was an edition that came out in the early 1900s that talks about a nurse's responsibility not to go along with medical care that the nurse has reason to believe is not in the patient's best interest. So it's a concept that's well-grounded in nursing. It's been around for many, many decades. And there's simply no excuse for not being a patient advocate. I recently had a very good example of what it means not to be a patient advocate. A woman was 28 weeks pregnant, and she shows up at an emergency room in a very small rural hospital. She's having intermittent abdominal pain. Now, intermittent abdominal pain is preterm labor until proven otherwise. That's the rule, and that's the standard of care. The doctor involved decided not to do an examination, not to check the cervix, and he diagnosed, absurdly, a ligament strain. Intermittent pain in the abdomen, 28 weeks pregnant, and it's a ligament strain. And he decides to discharge the patient rather than to start her on tocolytic medications, to hopefully stop the labor and to get her to a place that could take care of her and take care of a baby if it happened to be born preterm. Mm. The nurse, when I took her deposition, testified that she was there at the time. She was perfectly aware of what the doctor was and wasn't doing. She was aware of the doctor's plan to discharge the patient. She agreed that this patient might very well be in preterm labor. I asked her about her nursing assessment of this patient. She agreed that preterm labor was a definite possibility. And she did absolutely nothing to have changed the doctor's plan. She didn't talk to the doctor. She didn't tell the doctor, you know, hey, what about a pelvic exam? Let's do a pelvic exam because I think this patient might be in labor. She didn't tell anything to the patient. She did not one single thing to stop the patient from being discharged from the hospital. She was discharged from the hospital, and about 14, 15 hours later, she delivered a 28-week-old baby in very small rural hospital that was totally incapable of taking care of mom or taking care of babies. They didn't even do deliveries at this hospital.
Wow.
So that's kind of a blatant example of failing to act as a patient advocate. And we sued the hospital in connection with what the nurse failed to do.
That case
was just settled, by the way.
Oh, great. So when would a nurse be named individually?
Generally, my practice, and I think most malpractice attorneys who have some experience and are good at this, tend not to name nurses individually. And the reason we don't name nurses individually is because almost always, as long as they're acting within the scope of their relationship with the hospital that they're at, they're almost always covered by the hospital. In other words, the hospital is vicariously liable for what the nurse does or doesn't do. And under those circumstances, it really doesn't make much sense to name the nurse. And most people, in my experience, don't name the nurse. They would just simply name the hospital. Now, there are some exceptions to that in my practice. One is if the nurse is particularly unlikable. If the nurse comes across as being angry at the patient, hostile, mean, mean-spirited, if the nurse has done something particularly outrageous, then I might name the nurse individually. Also, if the nurse has their own professional liability insurance, under those circumstances, it would probably be malpractice on my part if I didn't name the nurse, because their insurance policy is another source of recovery for my client. So almost always, if the nurse has their own policy, and I know about it, I will name the nurse individually.
So how do you know if they have malpractice insurance?
You ask. One of the first things that I'll do is send out some paper. It's called paper discovery, and it's questions that the defendant or defendants have to answer in writing. And one of the things I'll ask about is if any of the nurses involved that I think have committed malpractice, if any of those nurses have their own professional liability insurance. So I'll find out about that fairly quickly.
Oh, I see. Okay. Any other tips?
A couple of things. Nurses, I think, are taught that they don't make diagnoses. Well, that is absolutely not true. It depends on it depends on what you call it. You can call it a diagnosis, but you can also call it an assessment, just figuring out what might be going on with a patient. And nurses do that all the time. And that's related to something that I call, I refer to it as the responsibility to do something instead of just observe and document. Sometimes nurses think that all they need to do is observe and document. The classic example, and I've had cases like this, where a patient was bleeding to death, the doctor wasn't around, the doctor didn't know what was going on, and the nurses meticulously, sometimes for hours, we'll document a patient's drop in blood pressure, their pulse rate is increasing, their respiratory rate is increasing, they're looking a little pale, their urine output is decreasing. I mean, clearly that patient in the right circumstance is suffering blood loss. And they document and document and document. They'll have pages of documentation and the patient dies because the nurse, while the nurse documented everything and monitored everything, recorded everything, just like they were trained to do, they didn't act on it. They didn't do anything. So if you see your patient, something going on with your patient that puts your patient at risk, you've got to do something about it if the doctor is not addressing it. You can document till you're blue in the face, and if some harm comes to the patient, you're responsible if you didn't do anything about it.
So they should always put, when they report it to the doctor,
absolutely,
any actions.
Absolutely. Another thing nurses can do to really protect themselves is to document, document, and document. And that's something you really have to do. Another thing about being a patient advocate, now I know that sometimes part of being a patient advocate is sometimes going up the chain of command if necessary, if you can't get an adequate response from the doctor. In my experience, there are very few doctors around who won't listen to a nurse if a nurse brings something to his or her attention, and very few doctors that won't really pay attention to what the nurse has to say and act on it and do something about it. But every once in a while that does happen. In those circumstances, the nurse has a responsibility to go up the chain of command, and the nurse has got to document what's going on and document that that they have done everything that they possibly can to get some action on the part of the doctor, including going up the chain of command. So that's very important as well. I have just a couple of comments about electronic records. Electronic records are becoming a part of nursing practice everywhere, and I think it's a tragedy. Electronic records make it probably quicker for the nurses. They make it easier to record things. The problem is that if it's not on your computer screen, the nurse may not look for it. And oftentimes what you need to be looking for as a nurse is not on your computer screen. But it would be in your head if you paid attention in nursing school and learned the standard of care. But oftentimes you forget about that and you look at the nursing screen and you just, the computer screen rather, and you just, you know, punch buttons and fill things out on the computer screen and think you're done. And I've seen lots of stuff missed because of electronic records. So be careful of electronic records and make sure that you look for what you need to look for, you assess what you need to assess whether or not it's on your screen, and document what you do in that regard.
Okay, great. Well, I truly, really appreciate that you taking the time to speak with us today, and I'm sure on behalf of the nurses at Nurse Protection Association, they appreciate it as well. And if the nurses would like to contact you, where can they reach you?
I can be contacted at my office number, and that's in New Mexico. I'm based in Albuquerque, New Mexico. 505-242-5297 is my office number, and if you don't reach me at that number, I will definitely call you back if you leave a number where I can reach you. I think this stuff is extremely important, and I've seen so many occasions in my career where nurses literally do have patients' lives in their hands. And good nursing care can make all the difference in patient outcome. And it's very important to be knowledgeable about this stuff. And unfortunately, I get the impression that this is information that is not taught in nursing school, or at least not emphasized as it should be. So I'm more than happy to answer questions when I can.
Well, thank you, and that's the whole idea of the Nurse Protection Association, to give them, the nurses, this knowledge, and I really appreciate you taking the time to share. You have been a wealth of information.
It's my pleasure.
Thanks again. Bye.